Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Raiders Insider Podcast on NBCSportsCalifornia.com. Introducing your host, Oakland Raiders Insider, Scott Baer.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 9 of the Raiders Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Baer, and with me is my pal,
Fallon Smith. Fallon. I am here, but guess where I'm at? I'm in San Francisco while Scott Baer is in Sarasota drinking Mai Tais.
Yeah.
So I'm a little jealous. I'm a little jealous right now.
It's like 81 and partly cloudy, pretty much nonstop. The Raiders have picked a good spot to have a layover between two games. They did this last year. They're doing it again. But Fallon, last year they went 2-0 on this trip. They beat Jacksonville and then beat Tampa. They can't go 2-0 this time because they got worked by the Buffalo Bills last week. And now, I mean, guys have been saying it all week that they're running out of time to save the season. And they kind of know, for as much as they say one game at a time, they know that they need to go like 7-1 to have any chance at making the postseason.
I mean, it's now or never, right? Which is so sad to say, because nobody, I'm sorry, I would have put money. I'm not a betting woman, so I don't bet. But if somebody were to ask me right now what the Raiders' record would be, I guarantee you I would not bet it would be 3-5. I would bet it would be 5-3, possibly, maybe even 6-2. But 3-5, Scott, I mean, none of us thought that that was going to happen. I think that's what the most frustrating part is, especially for the fans, right, who expected this team to be a playoff contender, a Super Bowl contender. And one real quick thing, my friend, I have a lot of friends who are both Raiders fans and San Francisco 49ers fans, and because I'm from the Bay Area, and I saw something on Facebook, and my friend Jason is a 49ers fan, and he was trolling Raiders fans, and I said, bro, your team is 0-8. How are you about to troll Raiders fans? And he said, we're not the ones that are talking about competing for a Super Bowl. And I said, touche. Okay, touche. Because really, right, that's where the Raiders are right now. Maybe an embarrassment, but I wouldn't even know what to call this season. This is pretty ridiculous for the expectations that this Oakland Raiders team had entering the season, Scott.
And I think what drives fans the craziest is you look at that New York Jets game in week 2, and then you look at their game against Kansas City, and you think, that offense is in there somewhere. Why can't they extract it on a regular basis? That's what's maddening. And when you go 3-5, and things aren't going well, and the bar was set high, and you've done a limbo move under it, everybody is getting dissected, every little thing, which brings us to the quarterback. Derek Carr there was no reason to criticize him over the last couple years, and now it seems like he's holding on to the ball too long, or he's getting rid of the ball fast, and it just seems like nothing is really going right for him. And Jack Del Rio, who normally leaves his quarterback alone in his Monday press conference, basically said Derek needs to be more patient and let plays develop downfield and take the shots that are within the play call. Now, what that sounds like to me is he's defending his coordinator and kind of indicting his quarterback a little bit. Do you think that is appropriate? Do you think that maybe Derek deserves some blame as opposed to it all being heaped on Todd Downing?
Okay, so here's who deserves the blame. The entire offense. Period. Point blank, period. And, of course, that starts with your $25 million quarterback, who is Derek Carr, right? This is a team who we said, Scott, entering this season, in order for them to win, needs to put up 28, 30-plus points a game. Correct, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the defense, because we knew that this was going to be, you know, their weakness, just has to be mediocre. And the offense, in their five losses, has averaged, what, 13.5 points per game? That's not going to get it done.
Absolutely.
And you have a quarterback who we both believe, we both still agree, is the franchise quarterback. He is a very good quarterback. But we're wondering, what is going on? You let it rip during the Kansas City game. You went back to what your identity was, and that was throwing the football, going deep. And then against the Bills, you say, you know, we had to go with what they gave us, and that was throwing underneath because they took away the deep ball. No. When you are a good team that has the weapons that the Raiders have, you need to throw the dang football deep. It does not matter. If you have a guy like Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, who cares if it's double coverage? You expect your receivers to go up there and get the dang football, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't understand what is going on, and it's very frustrating. I think it's frustrating to everybody, even the media, because we're wondering, who is this Raiders football team, and why, after a week where they beat one of the best teams in the NFL, the Kansas City Chiefs, and the best team, obviously, in the AFC West, by going deep, right? Why couldn't you do it for a second straight week against a team who's not very good at defending the pass? But they did a freaking darn good job at defending the pass. And honestly, you didn't even give them a chance to, you know, do much because you were throwing underneath. And they still took away the football. You know what I mean? It's like the most frustrating thing because I can't figure out who this Raiders football team is.
Yeah, and sometimes you can drown in stats and too many numbers can try to mean too many different things. But I thought Pro Football Focus had a really interesting one above how far the ball travels in the air and all that type of stuff. 49% of the time on third down, Derek Carr throws short of the sticks. Well, I think that is pretty damning right there, because you're counting half the time you're counting on a receiver to make a play after the catch. And that's not always the easiest thing, to where if it's just pitch and catch. If you're going beyond the sticks, you don't need something additional. And right now, I think that's not what you need, whether it's third and four or third and 12. You have to be going downfield. If you're going to take what the defense gives you, that's going to require like a 13-play drive, right? And they haven't been consistent enough working the ball downfield, and they find a way to make mistakes, and that's why they don't score enough points. And so that's our offensive conundrum, right? You know, defensively, they are who we thought they were, basically. But you look at, if we're just sticking to stars here, we only have a couple minutes left. Khalil Mack, I don't think there have been two times this year where he's been basically invisible, and that's a really weird thing because he's just such an impactful player. But, you know, does he have to be cautious of letting frustration get the best of him about being held and triple teamed and the defense not doing well because he's not contributing enough? Where do you think Khalil's head is at, and where does it need to be for him to get back on track?
Well, this was what was really alarming, right? You're going back to Buffalo, where he played college ball. You think he was going to wreak havoc on Tyrod Taylor and that Bills offense. Tyrod Taylor was sacked in every single football game until he played the Oakland Raiders.
That is a crazy
stat.
It's
crazy. You thought that he or Bruce Irvin or Mario Edwards Jr. or somebody was going to sack Tyrod Taylor, and that just did not happen. And what's even more alarming is the fact that he wasn't even double-teamed on every single play like we have seen him in the past, and he still couldn't get to the quarterback. And I don't understand what, you know, obviously, look, a lot of players have bad games. Khalil Mack is afforded to have a bad game here or there. I just think the timing did not come at the right time, because this is a team who is trying to turn, you know, its season around, and you just came off a huge win against Kansas City. You thought, okay, yeah, you're going to be Buffalo, right? And, yeah, Khalil Mack will take it over on defense and show up like he should because he's the, you know, reigning defensive player of the year. And he just didn't do that. And in his head, I mean, he needs to say, I don't care if I'm getting double team, triple team, chip block, whatever. I need to get to the quarterback. But he wasn't even being double teamed on every single play, and he still didn't get to the quarterback. So that, in my mind, is the most alarming thing because right now the Raiders need something. They need a spark. And if it's not coming on offense, it needs to come with your other best player on the other side of the ball, who is Khalil Mack. And he needs to figure out a way to dominate a game.
Yeah, and that just hasn't happened. It's tough because so much, you know, pressure and the burden is on him to get after the quarterback with a weakened secondary and a Bruce Irvin who hasn't been as explosive. But there really is, you know, kind of a lot of problems they have to figure out fast. They have to start winning in Miami and move all the way down. And it's interesting because obviously the players feel this, the coaches feel this, but our feature interview guest, Raiders Director of Player Personnel, Joey Klinkscale, says that even though he's looking big picture, even if he's out on the road scouting, he lives and dies with every single down. And he said, I've said more swear words this season than I have in a long, long time because this personnel department is frustrated. And I definitely welcome you guys to stay tuned to the feature interview. It's a really good 20 minutes where Joey really breaks down the Raiders' big picture philosophy, how they got to this point, obviously the disappointment of not being better this year and how they can remedy that fact in the future. So Fallon, thank you so much for joining us. And everyone listening to this podcast, stay tuned for Joey Klinkscales. I am so excited for this week's guest on the Raiders Insider Podcast. It's Raiders Director of Player Personnel, Joey Klinkscales, who is not hunkered down with the Raiders right now in Sarasota, Florida, enjoying the sunshine and all of the plush amenities of the Ritz-Carlton. He's on the road looking for the next batch of Raiders scouting, doing the hard work. And Joey, when you're out on the road like this, away from the Ritz-Carlton, can you kind of tell fans what your role in the evaluation process is, considering that you have national scouts and regional scouts and guys that do report to you? Where do you kind of fit in the whole scouting process?
Well, you know, my evaluation carries, you know, as much weight as anyone else's, you know, until we, you know, sit down as a staff and look at the player together, and then we kind of go from there. But right now, I'm just out looking at players. I was at Ohio State and been in the corner a few other places, but just looking at players and trying to get as much information as possible from not only the type player they are, but just the background, just where they're from, what they're like, injuries, character concerns, academic history, you know, so all that's a part of what makes a draftable player. So those are things that we look into before we select a player.
And obviously there's so much technology and information and game tape that you can have from the office, but why is it important for you to put your own eyes on somebody, especially during the college football season?
Well, a lot of times, you know, you see guys on tape, and that's one thing, and you see them in person, and sometimes they look differently. Sometimes they're bigger, sometimes they're smaller, depending on the position. But it's always good to get a feel for the player, especially if you're looking at a skilled player, because things happen in the game that aren't always covered on tape. A cornerback gets beat. You want to see how he reacts after he gets beat. You know, you don't necessarily see that on tape because it goes to the next play. So if you're there, if you're in practice, if you're talking to people, you can get a better feel for the kid's personality and how he deals with adversity on the field.
And, you know, being at the position that you are, it's not only, you know, the college players, it's the pros and possible trades and, you know, evaluation of, you know, free agents and things like that. You know, and but you've kind of worked your way up the ladder from a regional scout all the way up to here. You know, do you like being so immersed in every little aspect of it? You know, it must be a lot of work and a lot of evaluation and a lot of hours, but do you really enjoy this?
Yeah,
it is. It's a lot of work. You know, you're invested in it. That's for sure. So anything that goes wrong, I mean, you feel it from the time that you've put in to the, you know, the late nights and what have you. But yeah, I've enjoyed the role here with the Raiders, and when I was with the Jets, I enjoyed that role. It's all a process, and the end result is is getting to the Super Bowl. So every year it's one winner and 31 losers.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
And when you spent a long time with the Jets from 94 to 2012, when you jumped over to the Raiders, and you went through a number of different GMs over there. Was there any one that stands out that maybe you would consider a mentor or anybody like that?
Well, someone I still talk to this day, if I need to, is Coach Parcells.
Okay.
I mean, when he came aboard, he was our coach and our general manager. There was Dick Haley, who I would always call my surrogate father, because he drafted me to play with the Steelers, and then he offered me my first job with the Jets. So he was a guy that obviously I looked up to. I mean, he was the general manager, director of player personnel with the Steelers when they won the 4 championships. So he's someone that that really taught me the business. Taught me how to be a professional in this business and to evaluate. So those guys are people that, you know, they're kind of old school. They do it a different way, somewhat different than we do it today in some aspects, but the bottom line is still the same. So, you know, I can appreciate that. Those are guys that I learned a lot from.
And in 2012, you obviously jumped at the opportunity to reunite with Reggie, who you went to high school with, you went to college at the University of Tennessee with, obviously known him for a long time. Why did you jump at that chance?
Well, it was an opportunity. You know, this was Reggie's chance to be a general manager, and I wanted to do everything I could to help him be successful. I mean, that's something that, you know, had the shoe been on the other foot, I would think he would have done for me. But, you know, he grew up loving the Raiders. He was able to play for the Raiders. And now he's the general manager of the Raiders. So whatever I can do to help this team be successful and help Reggie be successful, then, you know, I was all for that.
So take me back to the high school days. Reggie is a year older than you. Can you remember any first impressions from way back when about like how you guys became friends or anything like that?
Well, we knew each other even before that. So, I mean, we probably knew each other when we were in, we didn't go to the same elementary school or
wow.
Our junior high school, but we've known each other for a long time. I mean, for a long time. We ended up going to the same high school, but we've known each other for a long time as, you know, competitors and teammates growing up in sports.
And you were the quarterback. Was he a linebacker back then? Were you guys kind of the leaders?
He was a linebacker. Mm-hmm. He and Raleigh were both linebackers, and they played on the offensive line, and Raleigh was the fullback sometime, and we ran a veer offense, and I was the quarterback and punter and field goal kicker and returner. So I had a lot of jobs back in high school.
I guess. So what's it like? You're in Knoxville. College football is religion in Tennessee, and you go to your hometown school. It must have been you must have been a pretty popular guy in Knoxville back then.
Yeah, it was great. Although Tennessee wasn't my first choice, to be honest with you.
Really?
Oklahoma. Hmm. Oklahoma was my first choice, and I was actually going to go to Oklahoma and be a quarterback and run the veer and do all that for Barry Switzer. And on my recruiting trip, they had 19 inches of snow, and I was easily persuaded to go to Tennessee.
I don't blame you there. What kind of made you think after your playing career was over that scouting was your next chapter or next step? When you're a regional scout, it's often, you know, a lot of time in less than fancy hotels and on the road and maybe not glamorous, and maybe those guys don't get a lot of credit. Why did you jump at that opportunity to get into scouting?
Well, that's a long story too. I didn't know what I wanted to do after I finished playing, you know. So I decided Well, when I left Pittsburgh, I played in Pittsburgh, then I went to Tampa Bay. But when I left Pittsburgh, Tom Donahoe, who was there, wrote me a letter. And, you know, he appreciated, I mean, you know, said he appreciated how much time I spent there and yada, yada, yada. And if there was ever anything I could do to, anything he could do, just let him know. So eventually I reached back out and told him I think I'd like to give scouting a try. And they didn't have anything open, but I was a part-time scout for the Steelers. So right after I finished playing, I got into scouting. So I was a part-time scout, and then I was a combine scout with National Scouting for like 8 months. And then, you know, I figured out that, you know, I want to give this a shot. You know, I've done this long enough. I want to give it a try. And then, you know, in about 5 hours, I had two job offers. So
wow.
I took the Jets offer, and I was there 17 years.
Wow.
that's kind of how it happened. So I started from the bottom and kind of worked my way up.
Yeah, and that's you know, kind of the same way that Reggie did. I actually did a podcast with Ron Wolf a couple weeks back, and he kind of explained the same process with him, and, you know, kind of like working your way up. And really, once you get to Oakland, and if we can fast forward, you know, back to 2012, I'm sure when you got here, you knew it was going to be a long-term process. And how important was, you know, was the patience, and, you know, was it at times difficult to keep your eye focused on the big picture, knowing, all right, this may hurt us in the short term, but help us in the long term. What was that process like to really get this franchise turned around?
Absolutely. There were a lot of things that needed to occur for this franchise to become a winning franchise again. I mean, they have a great history with the Raiders. I mean, there's unbelievable history. But they're obviously with all franchises, they're ups and downs, and they were in a down period and had been for a little bit. So it, you know, it took some time. I mean, there were things that had to be changed. The way of thinking had to be changed. So patience was a part of what Reggie was preaching, for sure. I mean, this was a, you know, everybody is ready for things to occur right now, but this was more of a marathon than a sprint to get this thing right. There was, you know, a lot that needed to be changed from players, from contracts, you know, a lot. Even inside the building, there were things that were prohibitive to winning. So Reggie was patient. He did what he thought was best. I mean, there were a lot of sleepless nights. But we got to the point where you could begin to see the light. You draft the right players. You draft the right kind of players that kind of stay out of trouble, do their job, who are really good in the community. But first and foremost, they're really, really good football players who have a passion for winning.
And a lot of people, and I think rightfully so, point to that 2014 draft as the turning point. And I was curious if you wouldn't mind kind of letting fans behind the curtain a little bit. Back in the first round, you have Khalil Mack on the mind, and obviously that was a smart thing. But Buffalo, what, trades up in front of you, and Khalil Mack went to Buffalo. And were there some tense moments there before you guys were up on the clock and the Bills were deciding what to do?
I mean, there were quite a few tense moments because, you know, we weren't sure what Jacksonville was going to do. Then mm-hmm. Buffalo jumped up. So there was some tense moment. I mean, he was the top player on our board of everyone. So we were hoping that he would be there. And I think there was a receiver or someone. Buffalo took
Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins. So yeah. When Sammy went, Reggie was pretty excited.
Yeah,
we were all excited, but he was really excited.
And then you guys go to sleep because the draft is 3 days long now. Like, then you go to sleep and Derek Carr's sitting there available, probably shockingly to him and to a lot of people. And I mean, did you wake up that morning thinking, man, if we could somehow get Mack and Carr in the same draft, you know, I mean, edge rusher and quarterback, those are, you know, franchise cornerstones. Did you get much sleep there between rounds one and two?
Not a lot. I mean, we were hoping Derek would be there. And, you know, there was even a point in time where there was a brief debate on whether, you know, we should try to move up to get Derek, but we stayed pat where we were, and you know, things worked out for us. We were really, really excited to get Derek as well.
Is there anybody, at least from a Raiders perspective, any draft pick that you're particularly proud of that you really kind of championed for, and then he came in and developed? I guess even if he's undrafted, is there anybody that kind of stands out?
Well, I think there are a lot of guys. Like, I mean, even the next pick. I mean, when we took Gabe, we were excited to get Gabe. We saw the potential that Gabe Jackson could be, mm-hmm. could have. And you know, he came in, and just like those other guys, I mean, he basically started from day one, and has been one of the cornerstones of that offensive line. But you know, a guy like I mean, there was Seth Roberts, a free agent. I mean, guys really had a feeling about who could come in and eventually be a producer on this football team.
You guys have been really good at that. The undrafted free agent thing, and I'm sure that really takes a lot of, you know, kind of mining kids. Is that kind of a point of pride for you, and how you like to evaluate and how you like to organize your scouts and things like that? I mean, you guys have found, you know, Jalen and Seth and Kowser, and the list goes on for undrafted guys. Is that a real, you know, point of pride that you guys are good at that too?
It is. I mean, we pride ourselves as being really good evaluators, and not all good players get drafted. I mean, for whatever reason, there are always guys that fall under radar because of, you know, a multitude of things that may happen on and off the field, injury, a suspension, you know, any of those things could happen and could turn a team off on a team, on a player. And you know, that doesn't mean that this guy, that particular player, can't play in the National Football League. It just means that he's going to have to take the longer route to do that. And they all understand that when you walk in the door, you have as much chance to win a job as the guy that was drafted. So, your foot is in the door. It's up to you what you do with that opportunity. So, I mean, we preach that opportunity. We preach opportunity. We preach the ability to come in and put your best foot forward. So I think those guys who have made it through that process are really passionate about football. They really want to be with the Raiders. And they're pretty bright guys. So they're pretty mature, and they're able to figure the process out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and you guys kind of, you know, especially just the fact that you're out, you know, scouting guys while the, you know, kind of season is going on, and you guys have to keep that eye on the big picture. But I would imagine that you kind of live and die with the Sunday results as well. Like, because this first half of the season, what's it been like, you know, like from that perspective, maybe not going exactly as you guys had planned?
Oh, it's been torturous. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. Most of the people around the building, they know how I am, and I hate to say it, but sometimes I have a potty mouth, and I let my emotions out. And but yeah, losing is hard. I mean, we're all in this business to win football games. So if we're not winning, then a lot of people in that building are not happy, and I'm sure I'm pretty close to the top of that list who's not happy if we're not winning. And we're all trying to get better and right the ship, but it's a process. It's a process.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, there's a lot of you know, kind of talent. This franchise, which was down for so long, just a couple more questions with our guest, Raiders Director of Player Personnel, Joey Klingscales. And you know, you found your franchise quarterback and your defensive player of the year, and there's going to be a lot of money going to those guys. How important is it, you know, kind of that you're at a new phase, right? So
right.
You had to deconstruct it, then you had to reconstruct it, and then now you got to pay guys and still maintain the roster. Is that, you know, what's tricky about that? What is your organizational focus, you know, as you try to keep this, you know, good thing going, and, you know, with the bar raised so high now?
Well, the good thing is the guys, you want to be able to pay the guys that perform, that are the right kind of guys, the the Derek Carrs and the Khalil Macks and the Gabe Jacksons. I mean, all those guys that have produced for you, then you want to be able to pay those guys. You don't want to let good guys out of the building. So our goal is to sign and draft as many good guys as possible. And, you know, at some point in today's football, everybody leaves, but you have to be able to keep drafting the right way so you can draft a replacement, because when you're able to draft replacements rather than sign them as free agents, obviously it's a lot cheaper. The guy's a lot younger, and he's able to grow with the franchise. Mm-hmm. So the key to all this is being able to draft appropriately.
And then, you know, one last thing, you've interviewed for two general manager jobs, one with Miami and then one with the Rams. I'm sure that obviously is a career aspiration. Reggie has said, you know, glowing things about, you know, that you're definitely ready and worthy to run your own franchise. How much, I know that you have a lot of things on your plate, but how much do you think about that, or how much does that drive you to maybe eventually get a shot to run your own program?
It didn't drive me much at all, to be honest with you. Yeah. I just want to be able to do the best job I can for the Raiders. And first and foremost, I want to help us win. Mm-hmm. I mean, if, you know, I think winning solves a lot of problems.
Right.
If you're trying to be a general manager, then your pedigree needs to be that, you know, you're helping the franchise win a lot of football games and getting to the ultimate goal, which is the Super Bowl. So I think we all aspire to that. When you come in this business, you want to be able to do your own thing at some point, but first and foremost, you have to take care of the business where you are. And you know, the Raiders are my team. I love the Raiders just like I played here, and you know, it seems like I've been here forever, because, you know, football years are dog years. I mean, 1 year seems like 8 years, especially when things aren't going right. So you know, we're focused on trying to get this organization to Minnesota.
Yeah, and I guess that is a great point, that as long as, you know, you're part of a winning organization and you do your job, obviously, within the scouting community and the personnel community, yeah, like, people notice that. So obviously, thank you so much for the time. I definitely appreciate it, Joey, and best of luck to the Raiders against Miami as we kind of trudge through the second half of the season here. And I mean, hopefully you at least get a night in a comfortable Ritz-Carlton bed or a fancy Miami hotel before you head back.
Unfortunately, I'll meet those guys in Miami, but yeah, they're enjoying the Ritz-Carlton and hopefully practicing really hard. And I know our personnel down there has put in the scouting report, and hopefully we're ready to go on Sunday to get a victory.
Joey, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
The Raiders Insider Podcast on NBC Sports California.com.